The October term of the Nebraska Court of Appeals. My name is David Arterburn. I'm from Papillion. I'm pleased to be joined today by Judge Rico Bishop from Lincoln on my left and Judge Francie Reedman from Gretna on my right. We have just one case for argument this afternoon, and that is Schieffer versus Schieffer. Counsel, I will remind you that the arguments are live streamed, so if there's any sensitive information that you do not wish to be out on the internet, take that into account in making your arguments. I will call the case. Mr. Dominic, you can go ahead and approach, and I will call the case again for purposes of the live stream. This case is Schieffer versus Schieffer. Mr. Dominic.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, I'm Dave Domina. I'm here on behalf of Ryan Schieffer, whose central objective is to leave here today with joint custody of his children, both physical and legal. There are some uncontroverted facts in this record that point in the direction of that result. There's evidence that Ryan Schieffer abused alcohol 15 full months before the trial in this case, and before a period of time during which a temporary joint custody order worked between this father and this mother and worked effectively for their two young sons.
Were the alcohol issues raised at the time of the temporary hearing in October of 2016?
I don't know the answer to that, Your Honor. I didn't try the case. I'm sorry. I don't know what the record was at the temporary hearing. I can't give you a response. What I do know is that there was no evidence to suggest that Ryan was other than an effective father at the time of trial. That evidence came not only from witnesses friendly to him, a priest, former teacher, family members, parents, who were an active support group, but also from the appellee's mother and close friend, who described him as a successful and effective father. You and the Supreme Court have both previously said that even incarceration in the penal and correctional complex will not cut off a parent's rights to have a meaningful relationship with a child. In this case, the court effectively terminated all custodial rights that Ryan has with his children and narrowed him down to limited visitation. Our position is that the law on that point deserves to change. It's time for it to change. I recognize I'm before the Court of Appeals. I fully understand that. But this is my place to make this pitch, and I'm going to make it.
Because I'm going to ask this of both of you. What was the worst evidence about your client during that 15 months of the temporary custody order, where they had joint legal and physical custody?
Your Honor, I think the worst piece of evidence against Mr. Schieffer is that one of his children was baptized in the Catholic Church, and he did not inform the mother of that child of the baptism event. He had an explanation for that about her renouncing an interest in the church, but upon better reflection than he exercised at the time, she certainly should have been invited. It was an event in the child's life in addition to a religious event. I think that's the worst, clearly the worst.
Wasn't there some evidence that he would not respond to emails that she sent to him?
It was controverted evidence, and it was never substantiated by an unrequited email, only by verbal testimony. There was evidence of successful email communication and successful text communication. So yes, there is evidence of that kind, but it is of the lowest category of credibility.
What about the fact that he enrolled the Jasper, I believe, to go to preschool without having a conversation with his wife about that?
Well, I think he thought that wasn't something about which there needed to be a conversation because, number one, he was willing to pay the expense. Number two, it was in a Catholic school in which she wasn't interested. And number three, she was invited to participate in the first day of school event and did. And maybe most importantly, number four, she never voiced an objection to the enrollment. She did complain she wasn't consulted, but never said she would have disagreed.
Mr. Dominant, I'm dropping the name of the case right now, but the Supreme Court has recently made some changes in how we look at joint custody versus sole custody. How do those changes affect this case in your view?
Well, Your Honor, there isn't yet a clearly articulated presumption in favor of joint custody, but there is what I think is now a judicial preference for it. The Supreme Court has recognized that children do better with both parents actively involved in their lives, and that it should be a last resort activity that cuts them out as far as Ryan has been cut out of the life of his children. The Supreme Court also didn't go so far as to harmonize domestic relations cases with all of the other categories of cases that come before our courts in Nebraska and ask the question, what shall we do with a parent's right to make decisions about the child's life? In every other area, except where we're divorcing parents and making decisions about their relationships with their children, clear and convincing evidence is required. It's required to affect grandparent rights, juvenile rights, termination of parenthood rights, which are in juvenile proceedings. This is the sport in the law, this area of divorce. There's no justification for it being a sport. There are some cases out there, the Supreme Court hasn't dealt with this, that suggest that, well, domestic relations is different because each parent still has at least a visitation relationship and a default parenting relationship in the event of the death or disability of the other parent. That's hardly a surrogate for being involved in raising your child on a day-to-day basis as an equal parent. It is state activity that decides to constrain the role of a father in the life of a child, in this case, or a mother in some other cases. And that state activity can be absolutely no more apparent than that I'm making this argument to the Nebraska Court of Appeals in the state capitol building before judicial employees of the state who must decide this issue. It should be a clear and convincing standard. The United States Supreme Court has held that this is a fundamental constitutional right, the right to be involved in the lives of your children. There is no equivocation about that. That means that strict scrutiny is required in order to impose any constraint on that fundamental right. And the constraint following strict scrutiny must be the least restrictive to satisfy a legitimate state interest.
Mr. Domina, your arguments are well taken. I hope you can make them to the Supreme Court.
Help me get there.
In the meantime, my one question regarding custody is, even if we were to agree with you that physical custody should have stayed in the same schedule after 15 months, how would you argue that evidence supports joint legal custody would make sense when, you know, your client was making unilateral decisions with regard to daycare and, I think, immunization and the baptism and so forth? Hasn't he already demonstrated that he's not willing to work in a cooperative spirit?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I think that, first of all, learning how to be a parent post-divorce is something that requires an education. It's not intuitive. We weren't born with the talents to be parents of divorced children. Frankly, we weren't born with the talents to be parents of children married. But he has learned, and he demonstrated during the course of the trial proceedings and the pretrial proceedings that he was learning to communicate with his wife, to be effective at those communications, to share decision-making, to be respectful of her. He's not perfect.
Isn't it possible also the trial judge was concerned that although he wasn't abusing alcohol during that 15-month period of temporary custody, that might have been in part because he was on probation and prohibited from doing so?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I don't think there's any evidence that the probation, the objective of which was to break him from alcohol, was unsuccessful. So the fact that he satisfied judicial requirements not to drink means he is a success story of the judicial process. That shouldn't be constrained to the criminal side. It should reflect well here, too. And in addition, there wasn't any evidence of a proclivity to return or a need to be counseled or cautioned by a probation officer or a judicial supervisor during that time.
I'd like to take a minute to talk about the acreage and the valuation of the acreage. And
yes,
I know
you
disagree with the court's acceptance of an outdated appraisal, but I'd like to focus for a second on the premarital aspect. There's not a lot of argument made in your brief on that issue. It touches on it, but there's maybe because there's not a lot of evidence on it other than Ryan's mother, I believe, testified that they gave the reduced purchase price and that the rest was a gift for Ryan. I mean, I think there's one statement in there. Is it your position that in part that any equity in the home should be considered non-marital?
I have an argument to that effect, which I touched on lightly in my brief. I think there are two mistakes about that acreage, one of which results in a reduction in the value from 420 to 303, the two appraisal differences, and the other of which would reduce it by $260,000, the difference between the purchase price and the higher appraisal price. I recognize the evidence is skinny. That's why I argued it the way I did.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Domino. Ms. Howie Fox?
Whatever's easier. Fox is fine.
Fox is fine. Okay, thank you. Ms. Fox, you lead.
Thank you.
The podium is yours.
Thank you. May it please the court. I think perhaps that the only thing that Mr. Domino and I agree on today is that there is no legislative presumption or legal presumption for state for joint physical and joint legal custody of children in this state. Contrary to Mr. Domina's assertions, I did have the opportunity to participate in the underlying trial, and I did have the opportunity to be at the temporary hearing.
So given that, then, wasn't the issue of alcohol problems with Ryan already available to the court when it awarded joint legal and physical custody?
It was, Your Honor. However, when at the time of the temporary hearings, we alleged that Ryan had alcohol issues and that he was an alcoholic. And at the temporary hearing, counsel at that time for Ryan indicated to the court that my client was exaggerating, lying, and making it up that Ryan had an alcohol problem. Mr. Domina referred to the various people he said that have testified that Ryan did not have an alcohol problem. He referred to a priest, and I would note for the benefit of the court that that priest, although he may have initially signed an affidavit that I understand was prepared by Ryan's counsel, that he didn't show up at the trial. He did not testify at the trial as to what a wonderful human being Ryan was, because by that time, I think everybody knew in that community knew that Ryan had an alcohol problem.
What evidence was there that during that 15-month time period of the temporary that Ryan continued to consume alcohol?
Given that the parties didn't have much contact with the exception of exchanging the child, we didn't have a lot of evidence that during that 15-month period he was using or abusing alcohol. However, Mr. Domina points out that he was on probation. That, in my opinion, means very little because he knew exactly when his probation meeting was. All he had to do was show up at his probation meeting.
But alcoholics don't control their, you know, alcoholism in that kind of random fashion, do they? I mean, they can't decide when they're going to be sober and when they're not.
They're going to know if they have to appear before the court at 10 o'clock. They're going to know not to drink until after 10:30.
When was that probation over?
If memory serves, it was over a couple of months, and don't hold me to that, it was over a couple of months prior to the actual trial. However, I think it is important for the court to note that my client was so concerned about the safety of her children that before they even separated, she required him to blow into a breathalyzer.
And he cooperated with that?
Yes, and when he blew hot, she didn't let him interact with the children. And for the majority of the time, he did blow hot. What's disturbing, at least to me, is that Ryan waited until the children were essentially 2 and 4 before he decided he thought maybe he should be a father in this particular situation.
Here's the question that I promised I would ask. What is the worst evidence that you have against Ryan for that 15-month period he had weekly, alternating week parenting time?
Well, I think what's probably the most egregious assessment of Ryan as a parent is the fact that he testified as to what a wonderful parent he is, yet he brought his mother, Norma Schieffer, in, and Norma came in, and Norma testified that they would get the children up in the morning at their house, that they would routinely pick the children up either at their daycare or at their school, that they, Norma would cook supper, Ryan would come home to his parents' house, Ryan would eat supper with the children, get them into bed, put the children in bed, and I believe Norma's actual testimony was in their room, because these two children, Eli and Jasper, had a room.
But didn't she testify that was because Ryan had to get up so early in the morning to go attend to his work responsibilities as a farmer?
Your Honor, I disagree with that. After it became apparent that as soon as the children were put to bed, Ryan left. I don't have any proof, per se, of that, but I think Ryan left to go home so he could drink.
What about the fact, was there evidence of that in the record?
That he could go home and drink?
That he went home and drank?
No.
You're speculating?
Because the only, that's why I said, it was my speculation.
Didn't your client, in fact, live with her mother for a full year after her son Dylan was born and have her mother helping her?
She lived with her mother for a period of time, yes.
I believe the testimony was for a year, and then her parents asked her to leave the house.
That may be. I don't specifically recollect that. However, I think that the fact that Ryan chose to essentially, during that 15-month period, he wasn't parenting every other week. His parents were parenting every other week.
Was that happening every night? That the kids would stay, or was that just happening some of the time?
My understanding was it happened every night. That he would leave, he would go back to his home, do whatever it is that he did, because obviously we have no way of knowing what he did. And then what he would do is he wouldn't communicate with my client. He didn't answer phone calls. He didn't answer text messages. He occasionally answered emails. He didn't tell my client that he was going to have Eli baptized, because he didn't think it was important to her. He didn't tell her that he had signed the children up for school, because he didn't think that was important. And he didn't tell my client that he had signed the child up for school. My client checked on her own, found out on her own that the child had been signed up and showed up for daycare, or showed up the morning of for the first day so she could take pictures. And then when Ryan pulls up, sees my client there, he gets back in his car and he drives away. He doesn't do what normal cooperating parents do, which is, let's take a picture of Jasper and Dad, let's take a picture of Jasper and Mom, let's take a picture of the three of us and have some third person take a picture of us so the child will have memories.
So was there any evidence that the mother made any efforts to sign the child up for school?
I don't recall if there was that in the record.
Wasn't there actually evidence that the mother was responsible for 21 absences at preschool for Jasper? And she actually acknowledged that those absences were because she chose not to take him to preschool. 21.
She chose not to take him to preschool.
And that was just between August and December of 2017, which was immediately before trial in January of 18.
Correct. She did choose to take him not to preschool. However, she was the only parent those children essentially knew, because she was the parent who was parenting while they were together.
So before, when you said he did it every day, are you talking 7 days a week or the work week, 5 days a week?
Miss Norma Schaefer did not indicate to us whether it was 7 days a week or 5 days a week, but my understanding is he had to feed those hogs 7 days a week.
Well, her testimony was it was three-quarters of the time. Three-quarters of the time. His testimony was 2 to 3 days a week. So somewhere between 2 to 3 days a week to three-quarters of the time.
Well, he also testified that he didn't drink. He testified that he didn't sell livestock, and it turns out that he did. He testified that he wasn't an alcoholic. He testified that he didn't drink. And yet, when I asked him on adverse, do you drink, he denied it. He denied it, and then when we played the audio tapes, the trial court judge could hear what kind of an alcoholic he really is. could hear him.
Again, that was all in the summer of 2016, which predated the temporary order where the judge felt comfortable awarding joint legal and physical custody.
That's because, in my opinion, at the temporary hearing, the court did not have access to that audio tape.
So you think the audio tape changes everything? One instance where Ryan was upset changes everything?
It wasn't one instance. It was two separate incidences, days apart.
In the summer of 2016.
And it was also, I think the court took into consideration the fact that he had no credibility because he sat up there, testified under oath, not only in his affidavit for the temporaries, but under oath that he didn't have a drinking problem when clearly he did. I mean, I don't think that any normal person requires their significant other or the father or mother of their child to take a breathalyzer before they interact with the child unless they have a real concern. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Fox. How much time do we have left for Mr. Domina?
33 seconds, Your Honor.
All right, Mr. Domina.
The testimony of Mrs. Schieffer appears in the record beginning at page 536. Mrs. Schieffer plans to move to Texas. The 39th president of the United States was an admitted alcoholic. We've had some others. We've had some on the bench. The fact that you were an alcoholic doesn't mean you aren't a good parent now. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Donner. Thank you very much, counsel. The case will be taken under submission. You are excused.
I inform the court that I'm taking my distinguished friend from South Dakota on a tour of our building.
Oh.